He's back near the beaches of Normandy. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.
American democracy asks the hardest of things, to believe that we're part of something bigger than ourselves.
President Biden, the top of French Cliff, American Army Rangers took control of during D-Day 80 years ago.
Gunfire rained above them, but still, they kept coming.
Praising how they helped turn the tide of World War II.
When the Nazis cut their ropes, the Rangers used their hands. An inch by inch, foot by foot, yard by yard, the Rangers literally clawed their way up this mighty precipice.
Just wrapping up his speech a few minutes ago, the president said freedom is worth defending. Israel's prime minister will address the U.S. Congress July 24th. And as the U.S. urges Benjamin Netanyahu and Hamas to agree to a ceasefire in Gaza.
United States Central Command says it's reestablished its temporary floating pier in Gaza to supply aid to Palestinians affected by war. But it broke apart in bad weather after only 2 weeks of operation. At the time, the U.S. said the pier had been used to deliver over 1,000 metric tons of essential supplies, but there have been difficulties getting the aid to those in need.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. The prosecution has just rested its case at Hunter Biden's federal trial in Delaware after the last two witnesses, the president's son, charged with illegally buying a gun while an illegal drug user back in 2018. We got an update to the economy this morning.
A very strong 272,000 jobs added to the economy in May. That was not expected. And the unemployment rate moving up to 4%. Again, this is a strong report. How will the Federal Reserve react to that?
Fox Business Network Stuart Varney. The Fed has been delaying cutting interest rates with inflation ticking back up recently. Now, President Biden in a statement said the Great American Comeback continues, saying it's been 50 years since unemployment's been 4% or lower for as long as it has. But polls have shown low Biden approval ratings on his handling of the economy. America's listening to Fox News.
Hey, it's Jesse Kelly. Are you still on the fence about owning gold? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either. The Oxford Gold Group are the pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD.
Hey, did you know that one of the largest U.S. flags in the state of Georgia stands proudly in Pure Talk's parking lot? Now, to honor that flag, Pure Talk is supporting America's Warrior Partnership. Now, they have a mission to prevent veteran suicide. Now, you can help this great cause simply by making the switch to Pure Talk before Flag Day. Get America's most dependable 5G network for just $20 a month. Just dial #250. Say the keyword save now for superior cell phone service, half the price of Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and you get the help.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
Another sunny, hot, dry day, but there's low pressure to the south that's making its way northward, and that will increase our humidity and help to decrease the temperatures. We still have plenty of sunshine and plenty of heat, but it's more in line with early June. Excessively hot again today. The excessive heat warning until 8 o'clock tonight. 110 the high. 108 tomorrow, 104 Sunday, 103 the high Monday. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggenberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage in studio. Mr. Johnny Porter, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
So, you know, it's been a good morning so far. You seem like you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. What time did you start this morning?
4:30.
Okay. And that's what time you got up?
Well, that's the time I woke up. Okay. Yeah, that's what time I woke up, 4:30.
So what's your routine look like in the morning when you get up? And I don't want graphically to know, but what's your routine look like?
I get up, and the first thing I do is, now I will say, because you always mention my Starbucks, I didn't buy this one. Troy brought it in for me from the last So Troy did. But now I have my own coffee.
Yeah.
So I get up and I have my own coffee. That's the first thing I do is go to my coffee.
Okay.
And then take a shower and get dressed and all that good stuff.
Okay. So from the time you wake up to the time you're at studio here, what do you think it is? An hour? 45 minutes?
Maybe 45 minutes, yeah.
Okay. So you've got a routine. And is there anything that throws you off in the morning? Like, let's say, are you ever out of coffee? Or you just forgot to do something?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, out of coffee is a huge one. I try to, yeah. If I'm out of coffee, that's a very upsetting moment. And yesterday, I have gauges in my ears, if people aren't familiar with that. I lost one on the floor, and so my poor fiance, I turned the lights off. I'm looking everywhere, and I was like, I can't go to work looking like an idiot. You find it, and then she's like, it's right there. Yep. Please start the lights back off. I'm trying to go to bed. And this is at 4:30 yesterday, but yeah, that threw my day off.
Okay. Now, the reason I say that is, we all have habits and routines. And again, you mentioned coffee. I don't care whether people go do expensive coffees, little coffees. You know, you look at whatever anybody's habit is, what is the actual routine or habit that they're in? And what's so funny is, have you ever done any college courses for like business and economics?
Have I? No.
Okay. So one of the things, you know, when you're going to business school, they talk about doing balance sheets and P&Ls, or a profit and loss statement, and you do certain things for business, and there's a regularity of when these reports come out. And the reason I asked about the routine is, for me, budgeting and systematizing the way the household finances work is just a routine. And
it's a routine.
You just get in the habit of doing it. And it's amazing how many people come in, and no disrespect, and trying to educate and coach people, it's amazing how many people come in that they don't even have a grasp of how much they make versus how much they spend on a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about that routine, look, I know if I get out of bed and I stub my toe or something and it just kind of spirals a little bit, you know, your whole routine could be thrown off just by accidentally kicking the bedpost.
Yeah.
Or like you say, you go out to the kitchen and there's no coffee. I forgot to stop and get, you know, coffee pods or something on the way. And it's just off. But other times you just don't even realize it. Like on the way here, I'm on the phone. I'm talking to somebody. I didn't really pay attention to the road, although I know I did. But I couldn't describe each turn in detail. You just drive it.
Yeah, right? You just do it. You just kind of mindlessly.
And that's where I go back to this, hey, here's the routine. The younger people, when I say that, I don't think you and I are that old. I know I'm a little older than you. But, you know, we don't get taught things like balancing a checkbook in school as much anymore. And the fact or the process of balancing the checkbook was knowing what your running total balance is, visually seeing what you're spending. So as an example, had a young person come in this week. And when I say young, I mean just both young in the sense of age and also young in the sense of mentally building a routine. And we figured out how much she makes, and she could just about qualify for the house that she wants, just about. And I said, you know, now I'm curious, because your income to debt ratio is right at that 50% mark. It really is. And that's kind of where that kind of scary barrier comes in, is if you're spending half of your money on car, credit card, and house, after tax, there's not as much left for food and gas and things like that that you'd think. I said, do you mind if we just do a budget? Let's just pull out my form and let's just start sketching out what you think you make. And so she goes, well, I really don't have that many other bills. Cool. So tell me what you think you spend in groceries. Oh, probably $200 a month. Now, Johnny, I'm going to ask you, how much do you think you spend in groceries per month?
Probably $500. At least.
I think that's a more normalized number, especially with inflation and other things. But she swears 200. So just put a pin in that. I said, okay, do you have any other spending? No, not really. I don't really do anything. I go to work and I come home. Cool. So now we're looking at her budget. And so I said, do you have any animals? She goes, oh my gosh, I have 4 dogs and a cat. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm gonna guess there's dog food and cat food and kitty litter and the things. And she goes, oh yeah, I probably spend $150 to $200 a month on my dog. Okay. Well, now that's a little bit more than just groceries, because I know you get them at the same place. And I said, you called me on a phone. Is that like somebody's home phone? She goes, oh no, it's my cell phone. cool, what's your cell phone bill? She goes, oh, it's $200. Wow, that's a pricey mm-hmm. cell phone bill. Okay, let's keep doing the things. Do you pay auto insurance? Oh, yeah, I have my car, and then I have two cars that are in the yard. They don't run, but they're still insured, so I spend about $120 a month on insurance. I said, how about registration? By the way, how much does gas cost you to get back and forth? And as you're going down this road, the reason I ask those questions is a lot of times people just don't think of what they're spending.
Yeah, they're just not at the top of the mind, right? It's pretty cool to have somebody like you that kind of pulls that thread a little bit, like, okay, and you gently get
But you
people
didn't think
there.
It was cool the first couple times.
No,
I didn't.
But it's like after working with you, I know you kind of you ease it in, right? Yeah. You don't shame anybody.
No, I promise I've made more mistakes and done more of the stupid stuff than anybody. But the reason I do that is so now let's put down on paper and literally write down dog food. Here's this much. Food for you. Here's this much. Oh, by the way, do you have anything for your house? Do you ever buy light bulbs, AC filters, you know, things that it takes you to run a house? Because I know we've talked about this. Look at the studio here.
Yeah.
There's four different types of light bulbs in here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is that, hey, we just found the cheapest light bulb and screwed it in, and that's
probably
pretty much it? You know, again, but you still had to go buy the light bulbs, mm-hmm. whether they match or not. And so we went through the whole thing, and I said, now here's my thing. Please, let's print out your last 2 months' bank statements. That's where the proof really is in mm-hmm. the pudding. So we don't balance a checkbook anymore, but we go and reconcile the bank statements because it tracks everything. So you actually, we went through it. How much, do you remember how much she said for groceries?
$200.
Okay. So there's a Albertsons charge for in excess of $300. There's a Target charge for in excess of $400. Now that's $700 if I'm pretty good in math, not $200. But when I say groceries, I'm very careful to say any food you think you need to eat while you're out. So there's Jack in the Box, McDonald's, Starbucks,
yeah.
you know, Dunkin' Donuts. There's all the things. And when I added up the rest of the food, and again, I love all those restaurants. You know, I mean, there's Chili Pepper. There's one of them was Cretine. And you just start going, okay, wait a minute. Your $200 is what you think you're spending? But that's so far from the truth.
Wow.
It's not even funny. And that's kind of like, when I drove here, I'm just kind of zombie doing my day. When you're doing your routine, that 45 minutes, you don't really even think about it, do
mm-hmm.
you?
No.
You don't. And, like, you don't, and I know the answer, but you don't go to bed already having your wardrobe pulled out and your whole day planned, right?
Whole day planned, no, but I do wear a black shirt every day and Levi's.
That's,
so.
That's all that's in your closet.
Yeah, that's all I have is, yeah.
But it's not like you pull it out and press it the night before set it up. And that's that thing with a budget is most of the time, the people that I see that need the most help have never actually been taught that the budget is the most freeing thing you could ever have.
Yeah, and that, I do still obviously struggle with that. And yesterday I actually reached out to my sister who's great at it, my youngest sister. She loves that stuff. I said, I need a little bit of a help. So I sent her an email, so hopefully she responds today. Bethany, if you're listening. But yeah, no, it's very freeing.
It's
right?
All on you, Bethany.
Yeah, it is freeing. You're right. And you have a sense and an awareness of actually what you're doing in life.
So let me ask this for you. When you're still kind of fighting it a little bit, what do you see a budget as?
What do I see it as? What mm-hmm. I don't understand the question.
Is it burdensome? Is it cumbersome?
Creating one, I do say that would be burdensome, right? Just have to sit down and think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then because it does get real at that point too, right? Because you think you got $200 in groceries and you know, like you spent $800 and then you're like, whoa, who am I? What am I doing? Like, how have I gone through life so mindlessly, you know, to whatever degree?
Well, and so here's sometimes, you know, again, there's yellow, there's red, and there's orange. And there's, you know, again, there's this shading back and forth that we can make ourselves think and feel anything that we want. And so when we look at her budget, as an example, and it's no disrespect to her, because again, this is a lot of people. But that sheer fact that she wants to go from where she's renting to about a $800 a month higher payment. Okay. Now, if you were going to go up $800 a month in payments, would you expect that over the last year you've been able to save $800 a month?
Yeah, you would think that, right? I guess that would be a thought, like, okay, I'm about to go this month, so I need to cut out $800 worth of whatever, because you said she was about 50-50, yeah, right, debt to income. So,
and the part of the problem is, look, I understand everybody, you know, a rising tide floats all boats. You know, everybody spends to the level of the water for the most part, unless you have a savings process. I don't care that she didn't save any money previously, but she really doesn't have any money at all saved. So if we're going to up your house cost almost $800 a month and you've not been able to save any money for the last year yourself, do you think that's putting her in a position to succeed or fail?
Yeah, it'd be fail. Yeah.
That, and there's the issue is, if we don't have an honest look at what we're doing from a budget perspective, that's when people get into trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like the guy or gal who wants to go out and buy that supercar, you know, race car, and you can just afford the car, but you forgot about the insurance, the registration, the maintenance. And, you know, you pull up in one of those sports cars and Russ Clark starts wringing his hands and licking his chops going, man, I'm going to love doing maintenance on that,
mm-hmm,
because everything just becomes more expensive. And that's the thing is, okay, if you're going to move from your apartment now, which I want you to help move out, but if you're going to move out, now your electric bill is going to go up. Theoretically, your water bill is going to go up because now you're going to water your yard, assumably. Your possible repairs and maintenance go up because if you're an apartment complex.
Apartment, yeah, they take care, they got a maintenance guy, and then no, after that, you're the maintenance guy or you hire one.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at all these things and it's like, okay, stop, time out. We're going to hit the pause button. Kind of like if I stubbed my toe in the morning, I want to pause and just, okay, take a breath. It hurts like a son of a gun, but let me just restart over so it doesn't ruin the rest of my day.
Mm-hmm.
And then just start. So, okay, we're going to do this budget, and it may not be perfect. I promise you, almost none of them are. But here's the other thing. Does she, and I kind of gave you the answer, do you believe she has any other money saved anywhere?
I don't think so.
Nope.
No.
So wouldn't it be better to start a, let's be honest with the budget and let's do a little bit of savings and just start with 5% of what you make. Start with 1% of what you make. I don't care what the number is. Just start that routine where you go, I'm going to get up in the morning, I'm going to go make my cup of coffee, and I'm going to save 1%. You know, if you said that to yourself, okay, cool, now you're going to put a little bit of money away. And next month, maybe it goes from 1% to 2%. But next month, maybe we chop out some of the apps. Oh, by the way, when we went through her bank statement, do you believe there's things like Netflix, Amazon Prime?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hulu. Yeah. And you think, okay, there's a lot of apps here. The, you know, Xbox Live. And you start thinking, you got a lot of expenses here. And I love the way, you know, if that's how you want to live, cool. I'm zero negative on any of that. But you can't really do the extra $800 a month for the house if you're not willing to give up some of this or be honest with what it is. And truthfully, look, have you ever worked two jobs at the same time?
Yes.
Okay. And did you do it out of enjoyment? Did you do it out of
necessity?
Hustle? Okay. I have two. You know, back in my career, there was times that I was working two jobs, 95 hours a week coming through college and stuff. And okay, you just do what you got to do. And if that's what needs to happen now, when I go back and talk to her about her budget, does she, and I'm leading the witness here, she has the ability to clock some overtime.
Mm.
It's a choice not to.
Okay.
Now that's interesting. So you're concerned about your budget. You haven't saved anything, but you don't even have to go look for a second job. You could clock some overtime because they offer it to her and the staff weekly. You could pick up 10 hours a week overtime. You don't have to drive anywhere else. You don't have to do any other planning. You know, what is that, two extra hours a day? If you told me you could make 25 to 30% more, and I know it's closer to 40%, but after the taxes, John, if you could stay here two extra hours a day and make 25% more.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You'd be like, hello, station manager, are you listening?
yeah. Well, I'm salary, so I stay here 10, but yeah,
but
exactly.
That's that, you know, sometimes the answer is right there, and we just don't pick up the get out of jail free card, if you will. And so for her, okay, it was a harder discussion, but now she's got a plan. And now she knows, I want you for the next 30 days to write down everything that you spend. Just period, end of story. And when you start seeing things that it's not really used, I mean, look, if you haven't turned on a Netflix movie in a month, turn it off. And if you say you play video games on your Xbox Live, you know, every night, my guess is you may not need the Hulu and the Netflix. I don't care if it saves you $20. Get rid of it, you know. And again, if you're going to use it, great. Budget for it. And maybe you just tell yourself, hey, that one extra hour of work a week, I'm doing that for my Hulu and my Netflix. You know, and then you start saying, well, this extra hour of work, is it worth my house? Is it worth my dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Because now the ending was, again, no disrespect, if you're going to spend $800 a month more on your house, are you willing to get rid of your dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many dog owners are willing to get rid of their dogs?
Yeah, slim to none, yeah.
So you're telling me you might not be able to afford, okay, then your food. So you're not going to eat or your dogs aren't going to eat. Which one of you are not going to eat? Or, okay, you can have the house, but now you can't have running water and you can't have electricity because we haven't budgeted for it. Or you get to go pick up 10 hours a week OT and start making some changes. And again, none of those are difficult discussions, but they are, because we tell everybody we don't talk about money, we don't talk about politics, and we don't talk about religion. Well, that's all I do on air, is talk about money and credit. And what does Russ do on air? Talks about politics.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that we all need to be informed with, because my guess is there's a lot of people who are listening to the show that get this and they actually like to budget and they run basically a household P&L. And then there's a lot of people who their sons, daughters, nieces, nephews never were taught that, because we grew up in this digital age that you didn't have to balance a checkbook. You know, have you ever seen a checkbook registry?
I've seen one. Yeah. Yeah. Early on. But
yeah.
Yeah. It was...
Who has one anymore?
Yeah.
And, you know, and God rest her soul, I was cleaning out some stuff in my desk, and I still have one of my mom's old checkbook registry. It was one of those things where it was just neat to see her handwriting, because mm-hmm. she had amazing, amazing handwriting that mine looks like two chickens fighting in a dirt patch. But, you know, it's line itemed to the penny with descriptions, and here's what it was, and, you know, went to hardware store, bought air filters and light bulbs, and here's how much it is. And literally you can see the balance ebbing and flowing back and forth. She always knew how much she had left in the bank. And, you know, sometimes it got super skinny, and sometimes you can see she's saving probably for a summer vacation or whatever. But it's just interesting that we don't do that anymore. And Russ and I talk about it on air. You know, he had the app Mint, and Mint moved to a different app. I'm not even sure what he's using. But we have these apps that look at our bank statements and graph and chart things for us. But we've lost the art of, hey, I'm going to track it myself just so I mentally know minute by minute what I'm spending my money on.
Yeah, what you have. And losing that, yeah, you lose touch, and then you end up spending some more.
So here's my thought with everybody. A family budget, a personal budget, is kind of like running a P&L for a business. Nobody who's listening to this show is going to go invest in stocks of a company without really looking at the financials. Mm-hmm. Now, whether they're super invested in it or their financial advisor like Tom and George and Adrian, you know, somebody's looking at the financials before you're dumping your money in, I would hope. And that's the same thing with your house. Look, it's just a simple 1 hour a month, really, if you wanted to. It's a one-page form if you really want to, but it also tells you the direction that the wind is blowing. If it looks like it's getting better, great. If it looks like it's getting worse, okay, we got to make some cuts or do something where it's not just a, oh my gosh, what happened? We were in such a good position a year ago. Because that's what happens to a lot of people, is they're in a good position, then they go buy the big TV, the new boat, the new car, the new furniture, and all of a sudden, you've got five or six other things financed that you didn't really pay attention to. And then you go, ouch, this feels really poopy.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that's kind of where, again, most people come in, because something feels poopy to them.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to live in her apartment anymore because there's been drive-by shootings.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Something doesn't feel right.
She's looking for a solution.
Most people come in to me for cash-out refinances because the budget doesn't feel right anymore. Something got too tight. Or, hey, we need to go move because we got married, we had kids, we did something. I need more space. The space just doesn't feel right. Most people just sit and enjoy where they are until something nudges them out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll talk about that and some more things after the break. I've got a couple of stats for you, but this is Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, back in studio once again. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning.
So I see you have Yuma Investment Group commercials.
I know.
What?
I know. I was
see what happens. Russ goes and gets married, and everything just kind of
everything does fall apart. No, the board fell apart the day he left. This board, it had a huge hum in it. We're lucky. I'm lucky today. You're not wearing headphones, but it was such a huge hum, and I'm trying to figure out what is going on. Finally, thank God, our engineer got in here and fixed it. But yeah, the power supply for the board went out. So that happens. Russ, where are you at?
He's on some vacation, boat, cruise, who knows?
Yeah.
Now, but do you have spare boards around here? Do you have spare
parts?
Yeah,
we have one out over here that had a soda spilled on it a long time ago, so we use it for spare parts.
You know,
so thank God for that.
Isn't it so funny that one 25, 50, 75 cent soda, you know, you want to just, it could be, you know, the last 2 ounces of a can is mm-hmm. what potentially ruined that very expensive board.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, and she got fired. That was a long time ago.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't good news.
Hope that can of Coke was worth it.
Yeah.
So anyway, talking about, here's two words that I want people to look at. And it's so funny how we can convince ourselves of anything based on the word we use or the adjective, adverb that follows or precedes. So if I say that car is $30,000.
Okay.
Okay. Versus, oh my gosh, that car is $30,000.
Yeah.
You know, versus that car is only $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same cost.
It's
but you can portray it any way you want
mm-hmm.
based on that. So what's the difference in your mind, Johnny Porter, average consumer, between inflation and appreciation?
What's the difference between it? Well, mm-hmm. I have a negative view of inflation,
huh.
right?
And appreciation.
Appreciation. I want my house to be appreciated for more. So,
To you as the owner, as your home is appreciating, if I wanted to come buy it later, that looks more and more and more expensive to me, which makes it harder and harder. So that's an inflationary thing in terms of prices for me. But we talk about home appreciation because somebody's earning the equity in that.
Mm-hmm.
So we love appreciation and we hate the word inflation, but to the right person, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
To the wrong person, it's, you know, it's an amazing thing. And you start looking at home prices here in Arizona. Do you think home prices have gone up or down?
Up, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. So we know they keep going up. So we can see that there's an appreciation rate. And the industry always looks at about a 2% appreciation rate. And they put that into all of their models. And they just assume homes are going to keep going up in value at about 2% per year. Now, in Arizona versus other states, you know, again, it could be higher or lower in other areas. Here is in April 2024. This is right from a housing market study on Redfin. April 2024, home prices in Arizona were up 7.4% compared to this time last year. Okay, so if your home is worth 7.5% more than it was this time last year, are you smiling?
I'm smiling. Yeah, that's nice. A good thing. Yeah, that's what I want.
Okay.
I don't like that somebody else's home that I'm trying to buy, though, is that much.
And
yeah.
See, there it is. So we hate to see gas prices go up. We hate to see food prices go up. We hate to see energy prices go up. Oh, wait, all three of those are not actually factored into the inflation rate as published by our federal government. So isn't it weird that what you and I need the most, food and energy,
are not factored in? Yeah.
Now, there are certain things that you can look.
Is there a reason for that? Do you know there's a reason?
Well,
is it to make the numbers look better?
The stated reason is they're too volatile.
Okay.
Which I thought that was the exact reason we wanted to measure inflation is I want to know what my budget is doing and whether things are getting more or less expensive. But, you know, again, let's be honest. When you can jockey around prices, you know, look at when – and again, here we're going to go down a whole different rabbit hole. But remember when the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was full?
Yeah.
And then the – current political environment wanted to lower gas prices, so they started releasing the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And gas prices for a couple of weeks dropped 10 cents. Did that really do anything?
Maybe we felt
optically,
better. Yeah,
optically.
Maybe we're kind of like, this is nice.
But it's interesting because those were filled when oil was super cheap. I mean, there were times that oil was being given away in various areas of the globe. Now, if you had to go rebuy that, are we back to very high oil prices?
Yeah, oil prices are higher now. Yep.
So at some point, we as a society
kind of adjusted
or fill that Strategic Petroleum Reserve at a much more expensive cost. That's, again, because you can kind of play with some energy things. But the way the economists portray it is, no, food and energy are so volatile that you shouldn't factor them in. Let's pretend... did you ever watch the movie Trading Places?
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Okay. Remember, the whole movie was predicated on the orange crop, you know, the report that they were going to get out. And again, from a commodities perspective, you can have weather wipe out whole crops. And we see it here clearly in Yuma that, you know, if there's huge storms coming in, the farmers could have issues if the crops are planted versus if there's nothing in the ground at that moment. So because, again, food could have huge issues. They pulled the food out because, again, there's non-controllables in it. But again, if I'm going to the grocery store, it's still coming out of my pocket. So you look at food, energy is not part of inflation, but I go back to appreciation. By the way, does it cost energy to build your house?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So you got to have guys and gals driving vehicles over. You're using fuel to get product there. You're using electricity to build the home. Then you've got all of the input commodities, let's say lumber, drywall, the whole nine yards. Does that have to be delivered on site?
Yes.
Cool. Now we're going to have more fuel to transport goods and services from all over the country. So just because you don't put that out there, you and I can see some of the reason lumber prices went up through the roof during and just through COVID was A, mills were shut down, so there was a supply and demand issue. And then it was the transportation getting goods and services here while fuel prices went up.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this double-ended issue, and that pushed new construction up. Now, if new construction goes up, what happens to all of the homes like you live in that has already been there for a few years?
Yeah, the market changes.
Huh, market changes, and the market goes up. And you smile again because you call it appreciation.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's inflation that's driving that. But there's also something else, and this is probably, I would say, top five questions I get on a daily basis. Derek, are home prices going to go down in Yuma, Arizona? Now, I'm asking you as a consumer who doesn't do this all the time, do you believe home prices are going to go down and or up? And if so, why or why not? There's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah,
this is just conversation.
It's, but I don't think they're going to go down. I'm no expert, but I don't think they're going to go down.
Right. Okay. And I agree with you 1,000,000,000%. I do not believe they're going down in Yuma, Arizona because of certain things. Now, I don't want to be one of those guys who says you know, back in 05, 06, you had everybody in this industry going, there's no bubble, there's no bubble, there's no bubble. That's like somebody going, hey, there's no weeds in my garden. Well, I can see the weeds in your garden, for crying out loud. There's weeds right there. But if you look at real estate is local, it's not national. And we try to dump everything into these big buckets and aggregate the data so we have a good idea. But Yuma is different than Fargo, North Dakota, which is different than, let's say, you know, somewhere down in Florida, which is different than New Jersey. So you can't say what's happening in New York, New Jersey, Florida, and San Francisco is the same thing here. But sometimes you can look at it. And, and the reason I don't believe home prices are going to go down is, do you, Johnny Porter, see people moving to Yuma, Arizona?
Do I see them moving now?
Here.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, and where do you, as a consumer, and again, I know you're not in the industry and I'm just giving you carte blanche, where do you see them moving from?
From places where it's too expensive, I would say that's my first answer, where the prices have gone way up, so they're trying to get some relief.
California,
yeah, absolutely.
Oregon, Washington. Yeah. If you look, interestingly enough, a lot of people, you're seeing population migration from New York, New Jersey, down into the southern states and Florida. So when you start to see people moving this direction, go back to, you know, economics, supply
and demand.
Demand. Yeah. So now it's not just you and me competing with one home, but now you have one or two people from elsewhere who are going to move here. Now you got more people competing for the same home. I don't believe home prices can go down when you have
people competing. No,
not enough supply and still a huge demand. Go look at homes. You know, again, if anybody wanted to go right on realtor.com and go do some searching for active listings, not pending, not sold, but active listings, and put in something that you think you'd be okay with. You know, give me a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage, minimum 2,000 square feet type thing. And look, there's not as many homes on the market as you would think.
No, there's not.
And if you look, the builders are pretty much building as fast as they can. I mean, it's not gangbusters like it was back in the heyday, but their crews are busy. They're keeping people going. You can see now hiring signs all over the place. So when you see homes still being built and they're not sitting on the market, and you see people still flipping homes, meaning, you know, you see somebody buy it, you spruce it up, you turn around, sell it. All of those people that are investing or making money, they're not going to do it
if there's no money to be made, you wouldn't do it.
So when you look at that, I don't believe the population is going down in Yuma, Arizona, which means we've got those items coming up. You look at some of the things that legislation is trying to push. Now, there's some interesting ones that I think we have to have some better discussions on, of what planning and zoning is potentially trying to do with things called ADU, accessory dwelling units, and potentially allowing, you know, duplexes and triplexes built on a residential lot. Now, good, bad, and different, don't care what side of the fence you're on, but there is a process by which infrastructure is built based on expected usage. So if I took every home in your neighborhood, Johnny, do you believe that the electrical infrastructure and the water and sewer infrastructure was ready and built that every lot could have 2 or 3 homes on?
No.
Okay. Well, that's one of those interesting things, because what is being proposed throughout Arizona is possibly allowing people to do that. Mm-hmm. And I just know that if my home is next to yours and you all of a sudden have a triplex and you have way more water usage and sewer usage, I question whether you have the electrical capacity, you know. But again, those things, why, and the reason I bring that up is not to debate that end of it. Why would the legislators look for that other than trying to figure out how to make housing less expensive, which in Arizona compared to California and New York, it's super inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, remember our adverb adjective thing?
Mm-hmm.
People from Yuma go, oh my gosh, that home is $400,000?
That's exactly what I do.
And people from California moving here go, oh my gosh, that home is only $400,000?
Yeah.
And it's the same cost, the same home, but the perspective is different. And you add the word only and a little excitement in your voice, and all of a sudden it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't believe home prices are coming down, is you can see that the legislators are trying to come up with ways to make things less expensive, but I don't know that they're looking at the big picture of how inexpensive Arizona is compared to many of the other places you could live. Again, when you look at, could you go buy a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage townhouse in town for $275?
3-bedroom? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. You could. Okay. Oh.
And is the payment significantly more because of where interest rates are compared to 4 or 5 years ago?
Significantly?
Yeah. Hugely more.
Yeah.
So is it the cost of the home, or is it what the federal government allowed to happen with interest rates and inflationary policies that have really pushed the home budgeting perspective out of line? It's not the price of the home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can certainly say, and let's anecdotally say, hey, in Arizona, home prices are up 10.5% in 2 years. Have interest rates doubled in 2 years?
Mm-hmm. They went up.
Yeah.
I don't know if they doubled.
Well,
that's where...
That's what I say. Let's have an interesting issue. People say home prices are overvalued.
Well, wait a minute. I see what you're saying.
If the home only went up 10%, and I say only because I'm using that colorful adjective adverb, it only went up 10%. But if interest rates went from, let's say, 3.5 to 7, that's a 100% increase in interest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... The dirt and the wood and the drywall has gone up worth 10%, but Wall Street says my financing the debt is worth 100% more.
Gotcha.
Which is really driving it.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And I guess we don't look at it that way from a consumer standpoint.
But we don't, because that's not what the news media tells you. They say, oh my gosh, look, Johnny, you've got appreciation. Celebrate that your home went up this much. And then the very next news study is, oh my gosh, home affordability is starting to go down. Well, it's not actually the home affordability. It's the debt acquisition financing cost that is potentially moving it. And look, at the end of the day, Wall Street, which we're part of, Wall Street is going to earn what the risk dictates that it's worth. You know, and again, if you've ever bought a car, did you ever buy a car with bad credit?
Have I bought a car with bad credit? Yeah.
Was the interest rate higher?
It was higher.
Okay. And if you've bought a car with great credit, what happens?
It's lower.
Okay. So why is it higher for bad credit and lower for good credit?
Well, there's a risk involved.
That's it. It's just the risk. So Wall Street was pricing loans super low. Why? Because they were competing with the federal government, who was buying literally every mortgage bond that they could. I mean, for a while, the only person who was buying mortgages and mortgage-backed securities and bonds was the federal government.
Mm.
But so you drive the price down now that they're not buying. So your rich uncle with the unlimited checkbook, who has no fear of his balance sheet going bust, isn't buying. So now Wall Street is back to a more normal environment. And look, I don't like interest rates at 7, but that's a normal interest rate over the course of human history.
Oh, wow.
Now,
so 3 was abnormal.
See, now there's the reason I bring that up is there's a lot of people who think 3, 3.5, oh my gosh, that's the rate. No, when I bought my first home, it was 7. Well, I can tell you the conversations for anybody who bought homes in the early 80s, which I remember listening to my mom and dad at the kitchen table talking about budgets and stuff. Interest rates were in the 12s and 14s.
Mm.
Their second mortgage was in the middle teens. By the way, they had a third mortgage. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You had people who were paying 14, 16, 18% on their mortgages. Was the price of the home lower then? Yes. But the interest rate cost was way more. And people were still butting up against that 40 to 45% of their income for their house, their car. So interestingly enough, we can look back and say, wow, the prices of homes over the last 40 years has gone crazy. Yeah, but incomes have gone up a lot, too. What was minimum wage back in the early 80s?
Early 80s? I don't know, but I remember when a first job, McDonald's, it was $5.15 back in 97.
Okay.
Like for $5 or something like that.
So now it's literally triple that.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the early 80s when it was $2.15 an hour, you know, type thing. So wages are up, but home prices are up. But for a long time, we've had rates significantly lower. And the reason I bring that up is, again, if you, Johnny Porter, you personally had $1 million to lend, do you want to lend it for 30 years, which no way to get it back, at 3%? The only way you're going to get it back is when the borrower sells their home and pays you back.
Yeah, you'd want a higher percentage.
So you wouldn't lend me $1 million at 3%?
Yeah, probably not.
Come on. Okay, Johnny Porter, would you do it at 5?
But
the reason I'm asking is because you can go right online. Lots of the local banks here are now offering you 4.5% and 5% on putting money into CDs and money market funds. You know, if you've got cash and you don't need to do stuff, I would say go do some investing. But if you're telling me that with little to no risk, you can put money in a savings account and earn 5%,
okay,
would you want to tie up your money for 30 years with no way to reinvest it elsewhere?
Yeah, no.
You'd say no. Do you want 7? Let's play the game. Would you theoretically think about lending $1 million at 7%?
Yeah, theoretically, yeah.
Oh, so now we're getting into that risk-reward thing that Wall Street can earn a more normalized rate. Now, let's go back to the one last thing, because we love appreciation. We hate inflation. Where is the inflation rate right now? Do you recall?
Where is it at? No, I don't.
So last published 3.4%.
Okay.
So if you are getting 3.4% of your money subtracted each and every month, because that's really what inflation
is. That's what happens, yeah.
If you tell me that you're going to get 7% as a Wall Street banker, but you're going to lose 3.4% on your money because of inflation, what's left? Pretty good at math.
Mm-hmm.
That's 3.6%. But that's not what you earn, because you have all of the employees, you have all of the infrastructure that you're still paying. Oh, by the way, there's a difference between the investment component and the servicing component. So, Johnny, if you write a check, let's say you write it to Mr. Cooper, which is one of the big servicers. Mr. Cooper collects your check. Are they the investor? The answer is no. They're the servicer.
Okay.
So the investor is going to be a pension plan, a Wall Street firm. It's amazing how lots of mortgage-backed securities are sold in tranches to insurance companies and 401k plans.
Okay.
But the servicer, the one you write the check to, they earn a fee somewhere between 0.25% and 0.375% of on interest to collect your payments and pay the taxes, pay the insurance, pay the investor, and then also be responsible if you go into foreclosure. So now they're the ones who are doing all the legal work. But now the reason I bring that up is, let's say 0.25% comes off the top for the servicer. So now the original 3.6% that Wall Street was going to earn, subtract the employee costs, subtract the overhead costs, subtract the servicer cost, and most of these guys are playing in a 1% to 1.5% interest rate profit margin.
Wow.
Well, if you had a lot of things go bust, would then they go negative? Meaning if you had a lot of homes going to foreclosure, you could lose your rear end quickly. So for the people who go, man, I'm waiting until interest rates come back into the threes. Until our rich uncle with the unlimited checkbook comes back to start buying mortgages, which I hope we never have. Don't get me wrong, I like cheap money, but I hope that never happens, because the reason that happened is the federal government was trying to stem off an even bigger problem in the market. If you think interest rates are going to come back to threes, they're not. You know, maybe they'll pull back.
So, but some people, and you deal with this, they're
a lot.
Obviously. They're still hoping for that, but that day is never going to come. So they kind of handcuff themselves?
I hope not. And that's the thing is, you know, look, I want everybody to have a chance to finance things as inexpensive as possible. But if homes are going up in value, here's the deal. If homes are still appreciating, buy the home now, lock up the debt, and then if interest rates come down over the next 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years, you can refinance and make it cheaper. And you've already secured the asset at the price that you bought it for. But if I waited, and I know this is not the correct number, but let's say I waited 5 more years to buy your home, how much more is your home going to sell for in 5 more years?
for more. I don't,
yeah, we don't know because we don't know what the market is going to do. 3 years ago, Arizona saw a 25% increase in sales prices.
Wow.
Now, you're telling me this study is 7.4%. Just let's pretend it's only 5% more. I don't want to wait till next year to risk
that
having to spend 5% more because my cousin Earl or my long-lost Aunt Phyllis is saying, no, it's too expensive to buy. Don't do it now. Rent is just as expensive. Rent has gone through the roof.
Rent is through the roof, yeah.
Okay. And now, see, I said it, and you parroted what I said. Is it really through the roof when you compare it nationwide?
Not nationwide, but yeah, it's gone
but
up.
But here, it feels like, oh my gosh, I can't believe those things are renting for $500 more. But comparatively to elsewhere, like there's a couple of shows online, and this is, you know, I flipped through just to see what people do television-wise. You ever seen a show called Selling Sunset?
No.
It's a real estate show over in California, and they're selling $5 million homes. And, you know, they put on the screen, here's the list price. Here's the commission earned. And so it's really about the money. But I'm sure you're too young to remember there used to be a show, Robin Leach, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, I'm Robin Leach.
Yeah, he had the accent.
Yeah, and it's the same kind of thing. It's this voyeuristic peering into homes and lifestyle and look at all the money. But the amount of space, meaning square footage that these people are buying over there because it's location, location, location. You know, some of these are $4, $5, $20 million homes. Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going, oh my gosh, this is super expensive. They're buying the asset that they want, still assuming it's going to appreciate for more. Because nobody's buying those homes.
Ah, gotcha.
That's the thing for me. No investor is buying anything that they think is going to go down.
No. Why would you?
Well, but who are the people who are convinced not to buy right now? It's not the investors. It's the average Joe
yeah.
who needs a roof over their head. And that's the first piece is, look, all this data means nothing. We all need a roof over our head, whether it's a studio apartment, a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage. Your first home purchase really is part of that budget that I just need a roof over my head. And I need to know what my living is going to cost me, because if I buy a home today, the payment's pretty much the same next week, next month, next year, other than taxes and insurance. I understand those go up, but you get a 30-year fixed. Oh, by the way, did you know what an ARM loan is, right?
I don't.
Okay. An adjustable rate mortgage.
Okay.
And an adjustable rate mortgage for most of history is supposed to be cheaper than a 30-year fixed in terms of interest rate. And here's the why. I just did that example with you, Johnny. Would you lend $1 million
fixed? Oh, so the risk has to do with the risk?
Correct. So you get a slightly cheaper interest rate when you, Johnny Porter, let's say the interest rates are 7% today and you got a adjustable rate mortgage at 6.25%.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound good?
Sounds better, I guess. Yeah, the numbers.
Great.
Yeah.
And they adjust based on the economic market data that's out there. And there's caps and there's limits. So typically, they don't adjust for 5 years. Some of them used to adjust monthly. That's a scary thing. But let's pretend 5 years from now, it could go up 5% more. That 6.25% could go all the way to 11.25%.
Mm.
Now, what drives that? Is it your earnings?
No.
Is it your credit?
No.
No.
It's the market.
It's what the market and the government and inflationary pressures do. And right now, the data that I can find says that ARM loans that have been done over the last 3 to 5 years, 70% of them out there are going to start adjusting upwards through the end of 2024 and into 2025. So that means seven out of 10 people who took an adjustable rate mortgage, your payment is going up.
Whoa.
In the next 6 to 12 months.
So for a time, you save that maybe 1%, but the risk.
It's the risk reward. So Wall Street gives you that thing, because if rates go up, they know they're going to share in that
mm-hmm.
extra interest, so they have less risk, but you and I as a consumer have a lot of risk.
Mm.
Now, you know what? Maybe you're going to sell a property. Maybe you had the opportunity to refinance it. Maybe you missed and your payment's just going to go up. And I've seen both sides of that fence. But that's the thing. When you go back to the market, why are so many people in adjustable rate mortgages?
Because it sounds better.
I think you're right. Is they were sold.
Like right then, it sounds like that's the better. And that's how we purchase things, right? Was ever, you know.
Well, sure. You go to it. You know, again, I love buying cars. Mm-hmm. You go to an auto dealership, and do they sell you the price or do they sell you the payment?
It's
exactly. Always the payment.
Yeah,
it's
always the payment.
You know, well, I really don't want to buy this car unless my payment's under $500. Cool. We can get your payment down to $498. But, you know, I didn't ask the questions of, is that a 36-month loan? Is it now an 84-month loan? I look at the credit reports, and it tells you how many months things are financed for. The normal number on an auto loan is now 84 months. That's 7 years. You know, Russ and I were talking last time is, you know, the average age of a car on the road right now was 12 and a half years.
Okay.
Okay, so you're buying, you know, the average car is 12 and a half years old, and you're financing it for seven.
Seven.
You better be driving that thing for some time and get some money back out of it. But that's the thing with adjustable rate mortgages is you're going to drive it for a period of time, but you better know how to get out of it. And if you're buying that really weird, eclectic car, like, Johnny, let's say you're a Yugo fan,
mm-hmm.
and you go buy a Yugo and you need to sell it. I'm not buying your Yugo. I have no need for that. But what's your dream car?
My dream car is a Jaguar.
What kind?
I don't have a specific kind. I just want one.
Mine would be a 1971 or 72 Jaguar XKE.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
With the V12.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to drive one with air conditioning because it's way too hot. But so now let's pretend you and I both want that. If I bought it and then I needed cash, I could sell it and get out of it. But if I bought the Yugo and you didn't want the Yugo, it's going to be really difficult to get out of it. So if you buy the adjustable rate mortgages, and there's some great reasons to use them, there really is. But if you don't know your exit strategy.
Yeah, that's what's starting to make sense here is that, yeah, you get one if you have an exit strategy, if mm-hmm. you know how to play the market per se, right?
And it could be playing the market, but it could be, let's look at military guys and gals. You know what? If you're stationed at MCAS for 3 years and you know you're typically on the 3-year tours,
mm-hmm.
cool. If you took a 5-year adjustable and saved a little bit of money and you knew you weren't going to keep that home as a rental, then you know you have to sell it. It makes complete sense. But if you're a born and bred in Yuma, Arizona, and you've gone to school and you're going to be a school teacher and you really want to teach here in Yuma, Arizona for the next 30 years and mm-hmm. retire here, I don't think that's a smart decision because the risk way outweighs the reward because I know if I took the 30-year fixed and rates come down, I can refinance.
Mm-hmm.
But if I take the adjustable rate mortgage and rates go up, man, I got to refinance and take a higher mortgage payment or my payment's just going to go up. Where's the reward in that
wow.
for me? But when I said the word sold, you see companies online, you see lots of lenders who are selling things called 30-year loans. I didn't say the word fixed. I said 30-year loans. Now, 30-year loans is a legally, morally, ethically approved way to say it's an adjustable rate mortgage that's there for 30 years. You have to say fixed if it's a fixed rate mortgage. Mm. So you see a lot of these companies offering, I just saw one the other day, 4.99% as a 30-year loan. Well, they didn't tell you how many discount points you had to pay to get it. And I also know it's an adjustable rate mortgage. But I have one of my clients coming in saying, hey, can you match this for a refinance? Sure, if you really want me to put you into an adjustable rate mortgage, which is like putting a loaded weapon pointed at your face, especially with what's going on in the market and the economy, I really don't think that's what you want me to do. Do you understand what they're really offering you? And this guy goes, no, it just says 30-year loan. Yeah, because they didn't use the word fixed and they didn't tell you how much they're going to add to your loan to do this. So again, I just want people to ask better questions. Where we started budgeting, it's okay to ask questions and it should be completely okay to say, hey, Johnny, I don't know what I don't know about certain things. Would you help me? And I know if I asked you genuinely, you would help me out with anything.
Absolutely.
Same thing. People can come in, talk to us, ask questions. There's no judging whether it's budgeting, inflation, et cetera. Well, so
I appreciate that, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And how much time we got?
We're out.
We're out. So for all of you, have a great, safe weekend. Thank you to our armed forces, military men and women. Be safe, everyone.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.